Okay, we're on Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. Shelo Chitim, Shel Chavero Chitim. The two of them have wheat fields that we can plant one furrow of flax at the border. Yosi permits it everywhere in the whole field. Manan Kayomen, what are we dealing with? Imamis Kaven Livdok, if you're trying to test the soil. I feel about so they don't much. Then why would the Tanakhama say it has to be at the edge? And if he doesn't want to be bodic, but he actually wants to use the flax, he wants to raise the flax. Lomali sharaminim filazar pishton osir. So then, why does he prohibit only furrows of other species? This is all messed up. This gersa doesn't make any sense. Even a furrow of flax seed is prohibited. I don't know what it is. I can't figure out, how to make the words fit. I understand what they're trying to ask here. Let's just speak out what they're trying to ask. So, we're allowing one row of flax as a test. If it wasn't as a test, the reason why it's allowed as a test is because no one plants just one row of flax. So we know it's a test. but if it would be another min, right? If it would be another min, so I guess another min, maybe you would plant it as for fruit, for its produce. So that's why we're only allowing the one row to be flax, right? But if it would be another min, it would be usur. So the Gemara is asking,
a row of flax has no value if a row of accepted test if it works. A row of cucumbers.
Let's make a simple case. A row of cucumbers, right? So that would have a value, right? So let's take the mashmos of the Mishnah. The mashmos of the Mishnah was what? The Gemara is trying to examine here. What are we talking about, right? Are we talking about you want to do it for a test? So then why is it only in the edge of the field that it's mutter? Why should it be mutter in the middle of the field? That's one aspect, right? That's question number one. Elamai, you're doing it not for a test. You're doing it for growth. So what would you expect the Gemara to ask? You're not then why I would say then why is flax mutter? Right? Why is flax mutter? In other words,
why is flax different than
others? Why is flax manishtana halalas, right? Why is flax different than all other fruits, right? If it's for growth, so I'm just trying to see how is it going to fit into the words of the Gemara here. The way they're just changing all the words. So in our English, it says, why does the Tanakhama prohibit planting only furrows of other species? What does furrows mean? One furrow?
The original text is much easier to understand than the Hebrews, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
if it's not a test, so even a furrow of flax seed is prohibited to be planted together with other species. I mean, basically, the Gemara is saying like this. The Gemara is saying, why is it mutter? Why is the flaxseed mutter to be put there? We're allowing one row of flaxseed. Why is it mutter? It should be usur, right? It should be klein like anything else. It's a simple question, right? I can't fit it in properly with the wording here. So the Gemara answers, Miskavan liftoi kanan kayamin. We're talking about who wants to test it. This is a test, Joey. This is only a test. In the event of a real row of vegetables, you would have been notified in advance. Reb Yaisi loichashesh lamarasayin. So Reb Yaisi, who allows you to plant it anywhere in the field, he's not chashesh from arasayin. He's not worried about somebody seeing it and saying, oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? No, anybody who sees one row of flax is going to know this is a test. Something like that. And Rabbanan Chashulam Arasayin, so that explains why they only allowed it on the side of the field. But you're right, if you planted it for actual produce, it would be usur anywhere. That's a double portion. This is not telling us anything new. We've already spoken all this out. But here the Yerushalmi, as we've seen in the past, speaks out what the Mefarshim explained in the Mishnah. Okay, and guess where they got it from? Reb Shmuel b'shem Reb Zeira. Now this is a fascinating Gemara here. This we're about to read here. There's a Shita of Reb Shimon. Now the Shita of Reb Shimon is quoted later on Daf Membeis Amud Aleph. Let's take a little diversion here. Let's just take a quick peek at Membeis Amud Aleph to Mishnah over there. Just 1 second. I'm sorry. I got the wrong page. Son of Yolam and Beis. Sorry, 63B. Wrong page. Sorry. 63B. Much better. Yeah, so it's in Perek Shvi, Mishnah Dal, Halacha Gimel, Mishnah Dal, whatever, Halacha Gimel. So it says the following: Hamasachach es gefano al gavi tvasa shachaveiroi, harei zekidish, b'chai b'chai yuso. So if I go ahead and I take my grapevine, grapevines, as you know from your own personal experience with grapevines, they have long, long vines with grapes growing off of them with big leaves. And you can take those vines and put them on trellis, or you can take them off your trellis and move them around. They are movable. It's not a problem. And it could go out for, 6 feet, no problem. So you take your geffen and you move it over and you cover over your friend's wheat. You got your friend's growing wheat. He did the right distance. Shisha tfachim, let's say, if it's only a single grapevine. So then the shear is 6 tfachim. So he takes it. And he puts it on top of the guy's wheat, and like I guess you want it. You get a kick out of making other people's food awesome. I'm a sugar nut, right? But that's what he did. So it says, "Harezei Kiddush." It asks the other guy's stuff for chai barchi yusa. You have to pay for it. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yisrael Reb Shimon Oimrim ain't on a mekadesh dov shen shalom. A person cannot ask or something that doesn't belong to you. In other words, my wheat's growing there. Where may it taste that you can just come and put your grapevine on top of my wheat and make my wheat awesome? Nothing doing this. It doesn't belong to you, right? So that's the famous of Shimon who says, it's a funny thing because we have the word makdish with a yud, on a makdish, davar shein shlo. And in the Mishnah, it's without a yud. It says enom the Nukudus. It says enom mekadesh. So Hashem Shol. I really think it should be enom makdesh. It should be with a yud.
It would be very helpful if it dealt with Tomatara.
Yeah. Whatever. But anyway, so the Gemara is now saying like this. So let's take a look over here. Reb Shimon says you can plant a faro of any species. So the Gemara says Reb Shimon here is based on his shita elsewhere. He holds, just like a person can't be makdesh davar shein shlo, so also, if the other species belongs to somebody else, there's no problem if surrounding it with your test. So that's why you can plant a faro at the edge of one's field where the grain surrounding it belongs to someone else.
But then it wouldn't be limited to
only five. So let's see. Good question. Let's see. Take a look at 9, okay? 9. Although the rest of the wheat surrounding the faro belongs to the owner of the faro, he rules since the juxtaposition of the faro and the neighbor's wheat is not prohibited. Okay, so we're talking about my field goes up to his field. Now I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to plant something right on the edge there. So on one side of the faro is my friend's field, and it's not makdash because it's in on a makdash shalo. So even though the other side of the faro is my field, but there's this jump here, which is an incredible jump, that since my friend's side is not aser, so therefore it extends over to the other side as well, and it doesn't answer my side either, which is a huge kiddush. I mean, you wouldn't say that misvara, But that's the first thing that it says over here. Now, from the Gemara's explanation, it follows that you could plant a furrow at the border area even for purposes other than testing, right? If the reason is because Einam Makdish Dov Shem Shalol, so that has nothing to do with whether I'm testing or not testing. It seems from that Svara, even if it's for fruit, it also would be mutter, right? Right. So that's a huge Kiddush. Chazon Ish suggests that Reb Shimon agreed that there's an Issa Drabbanan. So maybe if it was for fruit, maybe there's a Drabbanan. So on a derisive level, though, it would still be okay. It also follows, it's only at the edge of the field that he's going to be moderate. He's not going to be moderate anywhere in the middle of the field, right? The whole Svara over here is only migu that it's good on my friend's field, so therefore it's good on my side of the field. But in the middle of my field, for sure there's no Svara at all, because there's no friend, you don't have a migu anymore, so the whole Svara goes out the window, right? So that's another thing. So and then he mentions the final thing he mentions is Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi argues on Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah, and he holds that you cannot be make a like this. Why? Because he rejects that whole svar. He doesn't hold from this migu. He doesn't hold the migu that it's mutter on my friend's side, so it's mutter on my side. So okay, that all this is explaining this sheet of Rav Shimon. Okay, Rav Amar, ein adam chayvesh davar sheinu shelo. You can't close in another species if the species being enclosed is not his own property. So now this is another Gemara on 22a. That means that if there's an adequate distance between two species, such as six tefachim, the rule is, though, if I go ahead and I build a fence around the area or a wall around the area so that it's enclosed, so now because it's enclosed by the fence, so that's going to create a problem. Because the harchaka is not enough under those circumstances. So
harchaka has to be greater when there's a fence? It's counterintuitive.
No. If they're both inside the fence, they're both inside the enclosed area, right? So Rav says no, but that's only true if it's my both things are mine. But if you have the one, if it's yours and mine inside the fence, ain't onam chayvesh davar sheinu shelo. I can't, by virtue of making an enclosure, create an issur on something that doesn't belong to me, right? Same idea. Very, very, very similar idea. So the Gemara says on the base, it sounds so similar. The Gemara says it's exactly the same. That's exactly the same svara, right? Kama derb shimon oimer einon amak derb shen shalom. Kach rav omer einon klemish derb shen shalom. Okay, so that part's easy. Ram, however. The Rabbanon, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah that says that you can aser another person's property, then Rav's opinion, Rav wouldn't work out, right? Would be aser, even in the case of Chavisha of Dov Shein Shalom. So it comes out, what do we have over here? If you take a look, it's very interesting. Bavli, note 1 over here, it says Bavli Yavamas 83b says that there's a question whether Rav accepts law. Is it Hilchasa that a person cannot render Dover Shein Shalom Osir, right? Does Rav Paskin Enom Maknesh Dover Shein Shalom or not? So that is apparently a Machlokas.
Why is that
Yavamas? I'm not sure. I'd look up the Gemara. But the Gemara here proves from Rav's statement regarding Chayvesh that he absolutely does accept it. So this is an example where you'll see the Bavli having a question as to whether something is true. The Yerushalmi has it's klar that Rav does accept Rav Shimon's position. I looked it up. The Rambam, I looked it up in Hilchas Kalayim over here, you know, Parakei Halacha Ches. In Hilchas Kalayim, the Rambam says, Beferish. But listen to the way the Rambam says it. If I go ahead and I take my geffen and put it on top of your wheat does not become usher to you, because ain't on a makdash davar sheinu shalai. However, the isra of klayim is on me. I get malchus. I was over the isra of this isra chamukah klayim, right? So, in other words, the Rambam holds that you're over the isra of klayim, and
the person who the grapes are is over the isra of klayim.
Yeah, but the other guy doesn't answer. The other guy can eat his stuff. Not only that, Reb Chaim says the other guy can water his wheat and he could see it there and it could be, you know, he doesn't have to do anything. He could mamish work his field like regular. It's not my headache. It's your headache. Right? Very interesting.
In Kalai Karab, do the grapes become osser also?
Oh, absolutely. In a normal case of Kalai Karam, everything becomes osser bahana. You have to burn it. Pentukdash.
Right. So the guy who owns the grapevine, since he's the one that did this whole mess, does his stuff become osser bahana?
Yes, it does.
To him.
Yeah. And by the way, and the wheat also becomes osser to him. That's the other interesting thing. He will take on a personal isser of the other guy's wheat, even though ain't on the market. It's a crazy thing, you know. Anyway, ayin sham. Okay, let's go to halacha vav. Ein sam kumusad tefuah chardo v'charia. Okay, now we're talking about. In other words, before we were talking about flax, so now we're going to talk about. Chardol, which is mustard, or chariah, whatever that is, I don't know what it is. So, if you let's just use mustard as the example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you cannot plant mustard alongside a field of grain, even if it's just to test it out. Because you have to remember, one of the reasons why we were allowing it is because you would never just plant one row of flax. But chardol, you know, as you all know, it doesn't take much. My little bottle of mustard lasts me a whole year almost, sometimes multiple years based on the expiration date. So a little bit of chardol goes a long way. So one row of chardol is not out of the realm of possibility.
Value.
Right? A value. And therefore, planting chardol is not allowed. Right? Avol somchem l'shnei yirakos chardol v'charia. Now, there are certain things where it does damage. So the chardol plant will actually damage the vegetable plant. So there's no way that, you know, that you're putting it there for... When someone sees it, they're going to say, oh, there's no way he planted it there to produce fruit because he's going to hurt his vegetables. I think that's what it says over here. 3... So he says the Isidra Rabbanon of, in other words, the Isidra Rabbanon of Maris Ayin, that's only where there's a possibility that the crop was intended to remain there until maturity. But where the crop was definitely sown only as a test, there the Gezeir Rabbanon doesn't apply. An example is flax. Flax, if it will reach full growth, will damage the adjacent crop, therefore is instantly understood to be only as a test. Our Mishnah adds an example of mustard planted aside. Other vegetables are also known to damage vegetables. Therefore, if you observe their presence alongside vegetables, we'll surely realize they were planted as a test.
So planted for a test, the product is mutter?
So that's why it's mutter. No. You won't let it grow to maturity, right?
Why? You have to test it.
It doesn't have to grow to maturity to be tested.
To see the quality of what the...
No, apparently not. See, he mentions this. He says here, is therefore instantly understood by an observer to have been intended only as a test crop that will soon be uprooted. So I don't know which state it's uprooted. It's uprooted as soon as it begins to flower. I'm not sure. I mean, you're asking a practical question. The way he makes it sound, it makes it sound like you're not going to let it grow to maturity. I'm not sure. Grain, by contrast, in other words, we're talking about vegetables over here in the Mishnah. It says, avosom kum l'stei yirokos, right? In the Reisha it says, but stei tvua, if it will be grain, then you could not plant it, because he says grain is not damaged by nearby mustard. So you might say they're intended to remain until the harvest. Okay. Next. Okay. Somek labor linear, you can put the different species alongside uncultivated land, or plowed land, or legapa, or an unmortared stone wall, or lederach, a road, or legarach shugabayasar tvachim, a fence that's 10 tvachim tall, charichu omakasar vorachav abroa, a ditch which is 10 deep and 4 wide, or leilon shus mesach laaretz, a tree that covers the ground with its branches, such as a weeping willow, for example, or lesela shugabayasar vorachav abroa, a rock which is 10 by 4 on tvachim at the top. So they can, all these items are acting as a separator between two species. Yeah. So I want to say a few things here. Very, very, very interesting note here in note 6, which I think is really, this is like a big yesod, I think. The wall is built loose stones, one on top of another, without mortar to hold them together. The Mishnah tells us that even an unmortared wall is enough to separate between two species. Obviously, if it was mortared, for sure it would separate. Now, listen to this. In this case, and in the ones that follow, the different species on each side may be planted directly alongside the separating object. In this case, the wall. No distance is mandated. Okay, so this wall could be very, very thin. No distance is mandated between the wall and the crops. Although the diverse plants on either side will draw nourishment from common ground, right? The Torah's concern with respect to climate is not to prevent common nourishment of different species. That's not the intent of the Isser of Climate, but to prevent the appearance of commingling, which is adequately accomplished by means of the wall or the other separating objects. I thought this was an amazing like footnote. This is like this is really a yesod for the whole Masechta. What is it that the Torah asks us? It's not an issue of separating nourishment, of having one plant nourish with like the roots underground somehow intermingling, perhaps even, you know, I think underneath the wall, who knows what's going on under there, you know? They could mamish be intermingled, all the roots. No problem at all.
Very interesting. So why didn't he say that? He didn't say that. He said that he was talking about the nourishment.
I'm just adding that myself.
He ignored that. The most important.
I'm saying that obviously you can't see what's going on underneath the ground. Isn't it possible that the roots will go down underneath the wall and actually intermingle? That's not a concern, obviously. I think that's included in his footnote. Do you not agree with that?
I would be confused. He's focused more on the nourishment and not on what you're saying, which I would have expected.
That is nourishment.
The main reason.
That is nourishment. The roots are the place in which they get nourishment. I view nourishment and roots as one thing. I mean, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
So why wasn't a wall brought up as a possibility instead of Beis Rova and two amos, you know, and all that kind of stuff? Why didn't the Mishnah just say,
That's obvious that you're never going to build a mechitza in the middle of your farmland. You're walking by, plowing your ground. You're plowing your field every year with your ox. You're not going to be wanting to run into a wall where you're going to have to go around the wall. No.
If you have two different species,
no.
But I'm saying
I don't see that as a question, to be honest.
But even if it's not practical, I'm saying halachically it would be sufficient.
You're absolutely right.
And the possibility of a god.
Well, it's presented now.
Right.
I don't have any problem that they didn't ventilate them. Right. Exactly.
What happens if the two different species grow above the gather? Then it's going to look like...
A mission later on. That's going to be a mission later on. If they go and they intermingle over the top of the wall, that's a mission later on. Wait, hold on for that case. Yeah.
That's mixed dancing.
That's already... That's really the end of the doctor. Just this one line here, it's Mahu. Mahu Kharia, what is Kharia? The one says Marika, it's safflower. So if you didn't know what it was, now you know what it is.
Now you know what it is.
Now you know what it is, and that's what we'll stop here for today.
Marika.
What was it? Safflower. Like safflower oil.
So, Carcovia Ari.
It's around the last line.